time is it?
Don't roll over.
Okay. So thank
you so much and good night.
Since what you came here to see can't be done, I think we'll just call it a day. We'll take questions and try to answer them the best we can and play some tunes along the way and show you some different styles. Not completely different styles of guitar, but certainly different styles of guitar. Paul is a pretty well-known pop and traditional musician in Ireland. Pop country disco.
You've got blues and jazz.
Oh, look at that one too. And Sally plays with a good old person who played yesterday. I heard her dobro. I was in town and I heard her dobro. It was good. Does anybody have a question to start this off? Start the wave. Okay. Next year? Well, I don't know what you mean. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think it was the Gallery of Grace. That's as far as it goes.
What's the company that bought out the?
The company was. They published trade magazines for various businesses.
Oh, I'm sorry, boycott. Boycott friends.
They don't have names. It's just called like D2.
I'm really starting to get a banjo here right now.
I don't even know what Lights at Home is. Do you?
Yeah, it's a banjo tune that you played on.
Yeah, but when I played on it, it was called A. There were about three or four of them, so they get all really good.
That's from the Drive album, I think, isn't it? I heard that was really good. Anyway, what any other requests? Would you fill the tunes? St. Anne's Reel, okay. Anything else? Smoke in the Water.
That's really your breakfast.
Accra to Ishmael. Ankara to
Ishmael. Paul and I could play that right now.
Okay. Wait, Irish tune.
Kind of an Irish turkey's kind of tune. Same kind of sound with the pickups out of phase.
It's really nice.
I really like playing lap steel. It's one of the I really like doing that almost better than dobro playing anymore. But you know, it's just like fun with power tools, you know. For acoustic players, you put an electric instrument in your hands and it's like maybe with a chainsaw. They're fun to play with, and yeah, that was I've been building up a pretty good sized collection of lap steels the last couple of years, and old Nationals. If anybody's got any old six string Nationals for sale, meet me in outside. But those things are really fun to play with.
Jerry, as far as your style of playing, I noticed you don't do a whole lot of slams and seams. Bar slams and reverse slams. Do you try to avoid those for a particular reason, or?
Well, in faster tempos, I do. For slower tunes, I do. I play a lot of slants and a lot of pulls.
Could you play a slow song for us that you would use something like that?
Okay.
Thank you.
combination of reverse slants and forward slants and some pulls. String pulls are a fun thing on Dobro because of
pulling behind the bar with the ring finger.
You get like a 7, like a D7 chord.
How would you describe using a pull-off with the bar?
Well, with the leading edge of the bar, with the front edge of the bar, I like when I'm playing, I pull off just a usual. You hit the string with the bar down and pull off at the end of the bar. Keep my left hand anchored on the strings at all times, so I can have better control over the bar. If you don't, you have no idea where your hand might come down. But if you use this, you know, like a lever, work off of that, and do stretches. You might put a big callus on the side of my finger here from dragging it up and down the strings all the time. So, you know, for better pull-offs, gives you better control to keep
it. Is there a rule for when using those slants, like joint play, kind of like a double stop, two strings at a time with a slant, or?
Yeah, like a third, like a second string and a fourth string slant. Go down one fret with the second string. That's like going from a C to an F. There are different combinations of slants too that you can use like on first and third string, and also you can add to that your fifth string. Way of doing it. It's a very good way to do it.
Oh, Thank you.
Or why do you do it? General interest, but just, you know, for people who do play acoustic instruments, maybe use a mic and a pickup. Jerry and I have onboard pickups and microphones. The theory being that if you use just a mic, it'd be really hard to get the music out a lot of places, especially maybe a place like Telluride, a good example. But if you use all pickup too, you change the nature of your instrument, and the combination of them seems to work pretty well. So that's why this was born, and a lot of it came from our sound man, Rich Battaglia, who works for Newgrass. He made a preamp right here, the charge stuff, he calls it, and it handles a stereo cord, and the pickup in the mic is in the stereo cord, so when it hits the preamp, the mic is powered and goes out to the house, and the pickup runs through a parametric. I've also added a little chorus effect and some EQ and compression, real simple basic stuff. But it gives him a chance out of the board to have a pickup on the instruments and a microphone. And if you run into a situation on a TV show or something where the engineer says we only have one channel for you, you can put your earphones on and mix your pickup and mic in whatever proportion you like and just send him one line that is a combination. So it helps us, because I started out playing with about 7 boxes on the floor, you know. And I think it was my complaining to Rich so much that he decided to, you know, do something about it. And he built this preamp right here that is great. It handles the mic and the pickup, and you could just sort of walk into any place with just that.
Yeah, you could walk into a situation where there's a full electric band on stage, and I know.
Say you're playing the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Lightweight. But you were to go on stage and you, all you had was a microphone up there, and you had to play into a microphone. Well, you're not going to be heard, because when the guy turns the microphone up, the band gets louder as well. You know, you're in there, but you're heard the same ratio that you are on stage, just going through one microphone. But if you have one of these, you have a pickup and a microphone. Usually, we just run the microphone out in the house. We don't run the microphone on stage, so we can get plenty of gain out of the microphone. And I use mostly microphone in the house, colored with the pickup.
That's what's great about it, because when you put your microphones, you acoustic music players know about this, you put the microphones to the monitors, and it's pretty much Heartache City, because it'll feedback, it'll squeal, you spend the afternoon dealing with that.
There are all kinds of problems with different microphones, too. You know, if we had, like, some condenser microphones on stage, which are really hot microphones, and some SM58s, 57s, which are dynamic microphones, the ceiling is, you know, you have to run so much gain on the SM58s and the dynamic microphones to get them up to the same level that the condenser microphones run at. So you have a feedback problem there already. And I know like Tony Rice uses his own microphones on stage. It doesn't matter where he goes, he uses those microphones, and he has to deal with a lot of high frequency feedback going on through the set so he can hear his guitar on stage. It's just a problem.
Yeah, and Richard is here, so if any of you need any more technical questions or whatever, but I mean, or interested in using the preamp with a mic and a pickup, he builds them.
One more quick thing. How do you handle switching between rhythm and lead? I know Jerry's got a volume pedal.
Right.
How do you do it?
I just play diametrically. You know, I mean, you can play like this. Thank you. Beside Richard is in the house, and he's got the mixing board out of the house now. If a solo comes along, he can push it up a little bit if it needs to come through.
You still have to work it just like you do a microphone. You know, if you back in and out of a microphone, you just have to learn how to be dynamic with your hands, with your right hand instead of backing up.
I occasionally use a volume control down in the studio because when you got it backed off, there's no noise at all. So you could just keep it backed off and then come play. Noise problems, or that would really help. Besides it, I used to use the Ernie Ball volume control pedal just to, as an instrument, I mean, just to squeeze on notes and do pedal steel stuff. Those are great for that, too.
I was doing that last night when I was playing with the Dirt Band last night. All they were running was a pickup signal. So I knew if I was going to be able to hear on stage, I was going to have a lot of pickup on stage. So I also asked for a twin reverb to put behind me, too. So, it was just like left steel tone.
What's next for the Dobro Jerry Marshall stack?
It's very little rock band around with me,
right?
But the music is growing, so we're playing bigger places, you know, all the time. It's not just in the small clubs now. So Richard invented this thing that just enables us to be heard at the back wall. You know, you can stand on stage in the Coliseum in Denver and hear it cracking off the wall back there.
In
Aspen. Microphone. In Aspen.
Yeah.
Hear it cracking in Aspen.
Yeah. Sometimes we get complaints they can't hear the lyrics.
One more technical question. What kind of pickups and microphones are in transceivers?
That's good. You should have mentioned that.
A lot of instruments on stage, especially guitars, sound a lot like Tupperware.
Right. Ours sound more like aluminum siding. This is a good question because, first of all, guitar players who go out and buy a pickup in a store, you can buy a pickup. You can buy a thin line pickup or whatever. They're not going to tell you that you just can't plug that in. You need a preamp because it's so high impedance. This isn't, you know, not to get too technical, but it's very, very high impedance. You need a preamp to bring it down to line level when you go into a PA system or a recording board, whatever. But they won't tell you that. And Martin will sell you these pickups. And they, you know, you buy a pickup and put it in, and you think, geez, it sounds like, you know.
Shit.
So, thank you. God bless you, sir. And, you know what I mean? So you should know that if you get a pickup, you have to preamp these pickups. And I use a thin line pickup, and I use an SM98, a Shure mic. It's a snare drum mic, about this big. I have it inside the guitar. And Richard and I had a problem with my mics breaking up. I use a bunch of nice Countrymen. I use a Sony and all that stuff. I always broke up, you know. And this is a snare drum mic, SM98, and it takes a crack, you know. And it's real clean, real straightforward. And I use that with a pickup. But when you do buy a pickup, whether it's a thin line or a Martin or a Bags, you have to preamp it. You have to have some apparatus, whether it's a strat pack or something like that, to bring it down to line level and to give yourself control over shaping it. Because we end up shaping the pickup a lot, you know, rolling stuff off of it and rolling some of those extreme highs. You can make them sound pretty good, but you got to preamp. Our music inspires a lot of people that way. In fact, we cut a record for kids. My girl likes to potty all the time.
That's what I like about having Pat Flynn in a workshop. I would. Oh, there aren't any more questions. Or my pickup. Or all that. I've got an old Lawrence pickup, which I bought a long time ago when I was working with Emmy Lou Harris, and I plugged it in and I tried to use it. In that situation, I just hated the sound of it by itself. So I threw it in the closet for about 6 years. And then when I got one of these boxes from Richard, I put it right down here at the end of the fingerboard. And it sounded, the pickup by itself sounded okay when I mixed it with the microphone. I've got a Countryman Isomax mounted in here too. So that's what I use as a microphone. So a few years ago I started carrying around my own microphone, and I bought a Sennheiser microphone, and I bought a special cord to step it from low impedance down to up to high impedance, and ran it through these little boxes all over the floor, you know, so I could be like a finished product, you know, with reverb and chorus and things like that on it as it went out, instead of just, you know, I got to where I didn't like hearing dobro with just dobro.
Paul Brady has a Takamine guitar, which I think is the best pickup that comes on a guitar.
Yeah, it is.
I think so. Ricky Skaggs takes the Takamine pickups and puts them in his pre-war Martins. I think they got a really sound. He's got onboard EQ, so there's the preamp built in and all. Yeah, they're real bright and clear and even. You know, that's the thing about the thin lines. And then we'll get off of this. But a lot of times, guitar players know this, when you put your pickups in, the G string is too low or the E string is too high. It's a lot of work. Those are real even, real bright and clear. And
Pat and Paul, both of you, let's hear some how-tos on your different styles.
Okay. Well, I love Paul Brady's screenplay. I heard him play in Nashville last year. And I've got lots of tapes and stuff.
Well, I stopped taking myself seriously as a guitar player about 5 or 6 years ago. And since then, I like to play a lot of rhythm, mainly because I was getting into songs and songwriting. And before that, I was like, you know, soloing all the time, but I don't really do that anymore. I mostly play rhythm now. But most of my energy goes into my singing and writing. But my influences on guitar are really very broad. Like I started listening to country and western players, like country and western players, as they were called in Ireland, in the early 50s, and then I listened to your rock and roll things, and it's just there, you know. And really, that's, you know, same as everybody else, really. Just what comes out is me.
How about doing a country and western song with Paul Brady style?
I bet you know this one.
That's just a little more bottom end on this piece, Richard, and a hair more volume.
Thank you.
just trusting you was my decision. What can I do again?
Thank you. Thank you.
We have a question right here about just come up with material, and I guess everybody can address this point, Jerry, just working out arrangements with bands or whatever. That's a good one for groups, because I think it's probably the breaking point for groups, you know, right? How to work on material, whose songs get recorded or worked out, how you do it. Should there be three fiddle solos or not? Whatever, you know. And,
you kind of get tired of just saying, well, okay, here's this tune, and I'll play it, and then you play it, and then you play it, and then you play it, and I'll play it again. Well, it doesn't get it anymore.
The easiest thing to do is have somebody who's in charge of the band, you know? Then they can just tell everybody what to do, but if it's a democratic process, it gets pretty messy. And
if it's your tune, you know, if it's your concept in the first place, you should have a basic idea, or probably will, of how you want it structured. Or if you wanted to start out with less instruments and build to a certain level and then go back down, you know, to give it a dynamic level so it has a personality, so the tune has a personality and not just, you know, a square, you know, beginning and end.
I was going to say one thing is that in my band we have three songwriters in my band. Actually, it works out pretty good because, like, you know, we're kind of this horribly democratic band, so we don't either fight a lot or don't fight. But a lot of times when we're working on stuff, it's just brought to the band in an organic form, and it just kind of develops. But there's situations where it's worked out where I don't even take a solo in the song. My primary role is for backup or rhythm or something. And it's okay to not have everybody, like you said, it's just you play a break here, you play a break here, you play a break here, and then we'll end it. It's way more flavorful sometimes to leave certain things out.
I can relate to that. I write songs with no solos in them, and when there are solos, I play them.
Grass Revival's new album is called Friday Night America, and you're talking about Wendy Waldman,
right,
which is a change, and we had Garth Fundis there for three records. You know, nothing dramatic, except that Wendy, first of all, brought an incredible engineer to the project, so that we cut digitally. Those two things perked everybody up, started sounding good. But also, Wendy Waldman is a songwriter. She's a successful songwriter. She's a successful producer. She's a successful song person. So with four guys in a band, which we have, you can see that the possibilities for a tie are awesome. You know? So with five, she's an extra pair of objective ears. You know, and she can say, she doesn't have any allegiance to any factions in the group, so she can say, hey, it doesn't need a fifth verse, or it doesn't need another.
She was an extra four. She was pregnant during the whole.
Good point,
pregnant lady producing a band of four madmen.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Jerry. Woo, you're home. You know, she came in and she was very objective, you know, and we said, hey, this is an album, we want to do an album, a Newgrass Revival album, but, you know, we want it to be accepted in country music, too. And so we said, come on in and sling the axe, you know, and give editing suggestions. So we want everything to be focused and clear and coherent. You know, when I joined the band, Newgrass Revival has changed in that respect. When I joined the band, when the solo started, you could take the kids, go out to dinner, see a movie, come back, and they might just be finishing up the solo. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That was fun, that was great.
Meantime, the singer's forgotten all the songs.
So you know, now you know we're getting more focused. And there's a lot of interplay on stage. You come to a show, we're going to jam and do some songs, but as far as cutting these records, I think the songs are in good shape. They're not, you know, they don't wander off too much. We make the point of the song. I think the song dictates how you arrange it. not to make a bland generalization, but I think a song dictates. Is it a bluegrass song? Is it a rhythm and blues type thing? Does it need a gospel harmony? The song has a certain dignity and personality itself. And so you can't just be putting new shirts on it or with the hats and stuff. Yeah.
It seemed a strange thing to me. The first time I ever worked with this drummer, Kenny Malone, in town, he asked the singer what the lyrics were in the first verse so he could figure out what approach to take.
Drummer.
And yeah, the drummer is not supposed to think of moon. But that isn't the case anymore, really. You know, things have changed, and Kenny was one of the first guys that I ran into, though, a drummer that was sensitive to what was going on in the song content, so he'd know what to play.
Great story about Kenny Malone, who maybe none of you know, but he's a great drummer. He's done 100,000 records in Nashville. But he is a strange guy, Jerry. He's played with Newgrass, and
we get along with him.
We love Kenny Malone. We were cutting a Don Williams album, and Kenny hadn't come in yet. Don was talking to Garth Fundis and saying, "Man, I don't know. You know, every time I see Kenny, you know, he's telling me something really strange. You know, I don't even ask him what's going on." Don hadn't seen Kenny in about 6 months. You know, it's the first time I've been in the studio. Like that. Garth said, "Yeah, no, man, I don't know. You never know." He goes, "Boy, it's getting wilder and wilder." So about 15 minutes later, I was just changing my strings, so I was a little overhearing this. And Kenny walks in the door. You know, Don and Garth are sitting there with their coffee, and Don says, "Hey, Kenny. Hey, Don." He said, "What's going on?" He said, "Man, I'm building a waterfall in my house." Don just did one of these to Garvey. He was. We run out of time, Rich. Stories about Neil Diamond.
Thank you. Brady. Thank you.